So welcome those who weren't here this morning for the full moon day of October, which is extra powerful to get deep meditation, lots of mindfulness, lots of bliss, lots of energy on this special full moon day. You are so lucky to be here at this time. And, your meditation, how it's going and how to make the mind even more peaceful and more bright. We all know that mindfulness is really important in meditation. I was mentioning a little bit about mindfulness. Is that okay? Danya? Sam? Okay. That mindfulness is also really important. I was mentioning a few stories about mindfulness yesterday, like the story of the snake to program mindfulness, because you can be mindful of all sorts of things. You've got to focus mindfulness on what's really important. Now, you may be mindful of your plans for the future. You'd be mindful of the person sitting next to you who's making all the noise. But that's not really mindfulness put in the right places. So the places to put it in, as I said yesterday, the place between you and the object. That's really important, because if the mindfulness is there, that is where you can find you're making peace. That's where you find you're being kind. That's where you find you're being gentle. That's the three sort of right attitudes in meditation. And if your attitude is correct, you're aware that you're doing it the right way, the meditation will progress. And people don't make progress in meditation. Sometimes I'm watching the breath, I'm watching the breath, I'm watching the breath, I'm watching the breath, I'm watching the breath. Yeah, like this. You're this tough control freak. And that's nothing like the Buddha. The Buddha was not a control freak. He was this soft, gentle, peaceful being. He tried to be a control freak. That's before he became enlightened. And that's when the 6 years of asceticism. And you can see those photographs of him when he was really, really thin. And you can see, I'm not a control freak. Quite. But it's also, I said this to people the other day, and if you just said that about, I know, it was in a talk I gave to some medical people. But I told them, look, if you are overweight, and some of you are overweight, don't worry about it. There's another way of dealing with, you've got too much girth around your center, is you have to be happy. Because I found out from, somebody sent me this article from a medical journal. If you are depressed, upset, angry, whining about something, complaining about the noise of people not keeping the noble silence, whatever, you start complaining and getting negative, your arteries and veins actually contract. They get thinner and thinner. Which means if you have got any cholesterol or any other guck going through those narrow passages, you're liable to get stuck. And that's a cardiac arrest. Be careful. This is for Eric. Because he likes jokes. Did you hear about sort of the woman who stole a policeman's heart? Okay, yeah, she got done for cardiac arrest. stole a policeman's heart. Cardiac arrest. Okay. You got it now. It's very good. Okay, takes a while. But if you do, that's if you get depressed, your arteries contract, so you get heart attacks. But if you laugh and are happy, medics have seen this, your actually arteries and veins expand, they get bigger. So they can actually compensate for all the stuff going through there. And that answered one of those questions I always wondered about. Why is it that fat people are always happy? It's true, fat people are always jolly. And the reason is because the fat, miserable people died a long time ago. The only ones are left are the fat and the happy ones. Of course they did. Because they're miserable, they've got stuff going through them, so it clogs up very easy. They've been sort of weeded out of evolution. And the fat, happy ones remain. So laughing is good for your health, that's why. Now how do they get onto that? I'm not sure about... You see, you'll be happy. Okay, let's go off on a tangent. Being happy actually is important for meditation. it empowers your mindfulness. It gives you clarity and power to your mindfulness. When you're depressed, upset, sad, you find your mindfulness gets less power. In fact, that's what depression really is. People with such low mindfulness that everything is dull and dingy and grey. People with low mindfulness or depression, you can go into that room next door and have your breakfast and toast again, noodles again. Nothing tastes nice. It's all the same. But I've already mentioned to one person, they said, Michelle, she hears the sound, she's up in the kitchen. Oh, yeah, she's at the back. Said, Michelle's just a great cook. It's just so delicious. Now, Michelle, don't get proud, because there's an explanation for that. Because when you do lots of mindfulness, your mind gets so bright and so powerful that you could taste delicious taste in anything. But I noticed this again. My first retreat was in Cambridge. I was still a student. And our group hired 3 boarding houses because it was vacation time. So the students were away. So we occupied those 3 houses. We were meditating. And when I booked in, paid my deposit, it was with trepidation. I didn't mind sitting for hours and hours. I liked meditating. And I liked being quiet. The thing I was really concerned about was the food. Because this was boarding house in England. Now, many of you know that England is very highly cultured in some areas, but not in food. Certainly not in those days, in the 60s. In fact, the common meal was just a 3-course meal. Meat and 2 veggies. And you didn't really wonder which vegetable it was because they were all boiled so much that any flavour had long since disappeared. It all tasted the same. And if you remember those days. And the worst cooks of all in the whole country, the ones who couldn't get a proper job, were cooking for poor, impoverished students like me. So I knew this was going to be really, really hard. I really considered getting sandwiches or something. Because boarding house cooking was the bottom of the pile, the lowest of the low. But to my surprise, the food was actually tasty and delicious. I remember at the time, I thought, this is really weird and strange. I must have been good karma. We're really lucky to get one cook out of thousands who could actually, cook food. But afterwards I realized it was not the cook at all. It was my mind was so bright and so open that the tiny infinitesimal bit of flavour left after all that boiling, I could pick up. And that's why it tasted delicious. And you'll find, if you meditate here and get some nice meditations, Michelle will be your 5-star cook, Michelin rated. Why? Because your mind has opened up. And it's got joy. Opposite is depression. This thing which you were going for is this joy and happiness. And you notice that on retreats, as you go on retreats from time to time, after a while the food is very tasty. You go back to that hotel, you go back to that place afterwards, and the food is never so nice. It's your mind is opening up. That's the sign of mindfulness getting stronger. The sign of mindfulness getting stronger is you get more delight, more happiness, more joy, whatever you're doing. That is a good sign. That is why people who meditate are happy people. That's why when I see you, I know what your meditation is doing. The meter, the sign, the dial is this on your face. If your face is down here somewhere, I know your meditation is going nowhere. Up here, I know, wow. They're having a good meditation today. People who are easy to laugh, easy to have fun, easy joy, their energy of the mind is happiness. If you don't believe me, there is one of the teachings of the Buddha, and I often quote this in the Dhammadhyaya Sutta, the Dhammacetya Sutta, which is the monuments to the Dhamma in the Majjhima Nikaya. Was the story of King Pasenadi going to visit the Buddha for the last time. The king was about to die that day. but he felt like going to see the Buddha. So he went to see the Buddha, and he was in his hut, and the monk said, well, if you know, you're the king, so if you knock on the door, he's liable to let you in. So he knocked on the door, king here. Well, he didn't really say that, but I just made it up. But the Buddha knew it was the king outside, so he let him in. You know, probably I might do that. I usually don't open my cave to anybody. But maybe if the Queen of England came, because she's coming to Perth in a couple of weeks' time for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, if she knocked on my cave door, maybe. Not sure, but maybe. I might open the door and let her in. But anyway, the king, Pasenadi, knocked on the door of the Buddha's hut and let him in. And then the king was just showing his gratitude to the Buddha, how much he loved having the Buddha, like in the Jeta Grove, just within walking distance of the city of Sarvati, so he could visit often. And what the thing which the king said, which really struck me when I first read it, and I repeat it very often, he said how much he enjoys coming to visit this monastery, the Jeta Grove Monastery, the Jetavana. And the Buddha said, why? Why do you enjoy coming here? And he answered, because the monks in this monastery are always happy and smiling. That's why he likes coming there. Do you like going to monasteries or nunneries where the nuns are always happy and smiling? Or would you rather prefer going to a monastery where they're miserable and they told you off, Danny, you're not sitting straight. You're moving too much. Straighten up your back. Don't do that. That's joking. I'm only joking, okay? Good example. Would you like to go to a monastery like that? No, of course not. You want to go to monasteries or temples where people are smiling and happy. Look, life out there in the world, in the office, is miserable enough. You don't want to go into another place where people tell you what to do and how to do it and tell you you're not doing it good enough, no matter what you're supposed to be doing. You don't know what you're supposed to be doing anyway, but it's still not good enough, whatever it is. Oh, that really gets up to you after a while. But you come to a monastery, people are happy. And when they're happy, they're very accepting, very loving. And you find you can come in here with all of your defilements, with all the stupid things you do, with all the noise you make, with all the banging, with all the talking, with all of the sneaking food in the afternoon, with all of that, and you're still loved and welcomed. Isn't that nice? Because when you can learn how to let yourself be, then you can let the mind be, then you can get deep meditations. And it all comes from this beautiful sense of inner happiness. It's the inner happiness which empowers mindfulness. You know, at the beginning of every retreat, you know, I only give really general teachings. I usually start winding up the teachings, making them deeper later on in the retreat. And the reason for that is when people first come on the retreat, their mindfulness is not strong enough. And it's very difficult to meditate. Really, you don't know what you're doing. It's like driving a car in the dark or in the mist with no headlights. You can't really see where you're going. That's often what it's like in the beginning of a retreat. Try a bit of this, try a bit of that, but you're not really don't know really what you're up to. And that's why, you know, I try and build up people's happiness, to make them relax, to make them feel welcome, so they're not tense. That will increase the power of your mindfulness. So when it gets to the middle or the end of the retreat, you become more clear. So you can actually see what you're doing. So when he asks you, you know, well, just watch the breath, you can actually do it. Because your mindfulness is strong enough to see what's happening inside. So I'm empowering your mindfulness. You know, with a few funny stories and the jokes, I don't just tell the jokes to entertain you. I'm more sneaky than that. I tell them to get you to have a powerful mind, to give it energy, so that you do have enough mindfulness to be able to do the job of meditation. Because, you know, you find if it is misty inside your mind, you're not really quite sure what you're doing. I'm supposed to watch the breath, but what really is that? Why does the breath not stay? Now, why is it, you know, if I do get an imitator, it disappears? What am I really supposed to be doing anyway? Ajahn Brahm says letting go. What really is that? You've got to have your lights turned up in the mind and have enough mindfulness to see what's actually happening inside. And as that mindfulness starts to get stronger, meditation gets easier, simply because you can see where you're going and you can see what you're doing. And as the mindfulness gets strong enough, it becomes a really happy little path of meditation. It really is interesting. Are you really finding out how you work? And how this mind works and how this body works? It's fascinating. And there's also these little extra things which happen as very beneficial byproducts. You know, when you get happiness in the mind, not only do your arteries expand, so the chance of getting a heart attack in this meditation retreat has gone way down, simply because I made you laugh so much. I've unblocked so many arteries during this retreat already because of the laughter and the silly jokes. But not only that, when you really get mindful, you can realize even the body, just the tensions and the tightnesses which you have, you know, in the body. A lot of times people don't even realize that. You know, we're running around so fast to the next job, to the next thing, always really busy. We have very little time just to stop and reflect. It's one of the curses of modern life. Yeah, you're more wealthy than your parents. You have less time than they had. Less time with being with the people you love. Less time being with yourself and understanding who you are. I remember one disciple, he told me his daughter had just come back from a holiday with her husband. The kids had finally left home, and so they just had the two of them. And they said, now the kids are left home, they finished university, we don't have to look after them for a while. Let's go on holiday together. And his daughter said, it was strange. It was like I had to get to know my husband again. All those years we were going out before we had our first kid. Yeah, we knew each other. But all those 20 years or 22 years raising our children, all our energy was rushing around looking after our kids, so we forgot each other. It was like finding out who you were living with all these years. And that was actually a very wonderful thing they said. When we rush around so much, we don't know who we're living with. We don't even know this person called me who we're living with. We don't have enough time to reflect and see. The wonderful thing about a retreat, you have all the time in the world to get to know yourself again. And a lot of times you become a stranger because you've been running around so much. Now you get to know yourself. You also get to know your body. And you find out there's so many tightnesses and tensions in your body. And when you are mindful enough about that, you can actually learn how to let them go. You can relax, and relax, and relax. Now you see my robe is falling off again. It often falls off. You know why? Because I'm relaxed. Somebody, I once went to give a talk to this group of executives, you know, in Perth. No, it was like a club for, you know, executives. You know, they met, had dinner and had a speaker, so I gave that talk that evening. And afterwards, I mean, these were high executives. You know, the women were in these tight business suits, and the men with these collars and ties, you know, like nooses around their necks so they could hardly breathe. You know, all sort of well-dressed and well-groomed, but to me they were tight. And one of the execs came up to me afterwards, and obviously these are highly intelligent people. She said, I listened to you and I looked at you. He said, I was brought up in a Catholic convent, she said. And all those nuns, they had these clothes which were so tight around their body. And that's what their character was like. Always controlling, telling you what to do, punishing you if you did something wrong. They were just so controlled and tight. But you, Ajahn Brahm, the way you wear your robes is the way your mind is. You're totally loose and open. They said, that's such a relief. It's true, isn't it? Isn't it great you don't have to dress up to go to work this morning? You didn't have to dress up to come to meditation. Isn't that a great relief? You know, no makeup, no tight clothes. Ah, freedom! Do the same with your body. Give it a relax. Don't force it. And then you find lots of tightnesses and tensions release in the body. These are all the success stories. This is health and meditation, what happens. About 4 or 5 years ago, we did this retreat over in, before we used to use a Catholic place in North Perth. It's the only place we could use. And this guy came to see me at the very beginning because he was asked to check in with me because he said, I've booked into this retreat, but I don't know whether I can last. You know, because he had this very terrible eczema, you know, this skin eruptions. And he showed it to me, and it was terrible. It was all over his body, even his head. You know, this rash. If you ever had a very itchy rash, imagine that the whole of your body. And he said he tried all sorts of medication, psychology, nothing was working at all. It was driving him crazy. And as it would, and I felt, my goodness, that's torture. I've seen people with cancers, I've seen people, you know, with all sorts of diseases, but, you know, that looked terrible. And he said that, you know, I don't know if I can sit, you know, even for 5 or 10 minutes, because I just feel like scratching, but I can't scratch. And he had to wear this rubber thing over his head, actually, to stop him scratching. And it felt really terrible. But, you know, I told him how to meditate, give it a try. Because he was so desperate, he, you know, had nothing else to do. And it was one of those wonderful success stories. At the end of lasted the whole of the retreat, and he showed me, he said, look, it had all disappeared except just for his ankles. And if I had that rash on my ankles, I'd be very upset. But for him, he said, this is so much better than what I had when I first came here. It's all gone. And thank you so much. Only a tiny bit left. Which was, oh, it's easy, that's nothing. Because when it's on your whole body now, and he wasn't imagining this because he could see it. And his skin was clear again. And there was a time when, because he had let go of his stress, stopped trying to do things, wore his robe and his body and his mind loosely like mine, then his body could heal itself. We all know that most of the medical diseases are caused by stress. On this retreat, when you get mindful, you begin to understand what that means. You will feel some tight places in your body. Simply because, number one, you haven't noticed them, you've been too busy. And number two, your mindfulness has been so weak, you can't notice them. And all you need to do when you notice those tight places in the body is just relax, be kind, be gentle, and you find everything sort of opens up. Like tight parts of your body, like they're being pulled apart. You release the holding and it all just becomes soft again. Things which are compressed like a tight sponge is opened out so it becomes light and fluffy again. Your whole body starts to feel ease and healing starts to happen. You feel that. You can feel that in your body. Your mindfulness sees all these parts of the body start to open up and heal, and you feel really good afterwards. And sometimes it happens while you're meditating. Especially if you really let go so you feel peaceful. You can never make yourself peaceful. The more you try to be peaceful, the more tense you get. That's obvious, isn't it? We're not mindful enough to see that. But when we really, really sort of let go and relax, then we find peace in our body and in our mind. And then we find with a peaceful body, we find sometimes what we call hot spots. I don't know if any of you have had those hot spots in your body yet, but if they do, well done. Sometimes it might be in your knee, it gets very hot. You wonder, what's going on there? What's going on is repair job. You may have injured your knee or something happened there. You don't know what you've done to the body, but the body certainly does. And when you let go and give it some space, your body has the opportunity to heal itself. And meditators have been telling me they get hot spots here, hot spots in their back. That was a classic case. A lady came and said when she was meditating, it was really strange. Her whole shoulders and neck were so hot like they had a fever. Not the whole of the body, but localized, just in that area. She'd had a car accident recently. She had whiplash. And I said to her, that's probably what you've had. And she was very impressed. And I said, how do you feel now? She said, I feel so relaxed, so good. Because that's what's happened. There was an injury there, some internal bruising or whatever. And when she was meditating, she was letting go enough that the energies could flow to that part of the body and do a bit of healing. Wonderful. So if any of you have any hot spots during your meditation, right, localized, well done. Something is happening there, healing. And you know, this meditation retreat is much cheaper than going into Singapore General Hospital. It's also much more pleasant. So it's very good value for money. And you sort of heal yourself up. So that's what happens when mindfulness gets strong. The body can open up and relax. And you get this physical healing. And you also get the emotional healing as well, which is even harder to heal than the physical healing if you don't try meditation. We've got all this pain in the past, all this guilt, all this fear of what might happen in the future. Oh my goodness, if you think your body is bruised, your mind is just battered to bits like it's just been beaten up by some drug gang. But after a while, you find the mind gets some healing as well. You feel peaceful, and all of those pains of the past, all of those anxieties of the future, all melt away, and you feel free. So there's a lot of actually emotional healing has to happen with meditation. So all that stuff of the past, which people keep on talking to me about during the interviews, you know, it's mostly fears of the past, isn't it? The anxieties for the future. You know, even though there's much to be anxious about the future, but it's the stuff of the past which really burdens you. And it's stuff which you can't change. So, of course, just let it go. Don't be someone who carries the past like a big rucksack on your back with all these heavy stones in it. The past is a prison cell whose door is always open. You can walk out any time you like. Any time you like. The thing is, it takes a lot of courage to let the past go. Sometimes, first of all, we need to get permission from someone like me. Say, is it allowed to forgive yourself, to let the past go? Just discard it. It is all right to write it down on a piece of paper, put it in the toilet and flush it away. A lot of times we think we can't do that. It's not allowed. It's not permissible. I'm doing the wrong thing. You're doing the right thing. Please free yourself. And then the mind feels this great sense like the body is healed. You don't have to carry around that pain anymore. Look, if it's somebody else's fault, somebody else has hurt you, why allow them to keep on hurting you? They've hurt you once already. And every time you remember that, they're hurting you again. And the next time you remember it, they're hurting you again. It wasn't your fault. Don't carry the bad karma of other people. Let it go. If they want to be stupid, fine, you go be stupid, I'm going to be happy. Never allow other people to control your happiness. I know that. My happiness is my concern. If you call me the most stupid monk who tells bad jokes and who keeps on using the shit word, although I used it again. I'm not going to worry about what you say. That's not going to spoil my day. I'm going to be happy no matter what you say. That is taking control of your happiness, which means no one can upset you anymore. You know, as a monk, people try to upset me, especially when you go to teaching schools. You know, kids over here in Australia, it's not the same as teaching a class in Singapore. In Singapore, they're well disciplined. Over here, they're feral. They're like wild animals in these classrooms. Well, not quite like that, but they're pretty close. And you know, you know, the toughest question I ever got. And it's about 20 years ago now, when I went to like an ordinary high school here in Australia. It was a girls' class. About 13 or 14 year olds. You know, they're the worst possible. And one of the greatest questions, I gave a talk on Buddhism. Not any questions. And instead of asking me about Buddhism or whatever, one of the girls put her hand up and said, "The girls turn you on then." She was just winding me up, trying to get some sort of response out of me. Do you want to know what I said? I didn't need to, because one of the other girls, I'll forget her, she's just making an idiot of herself and embarrassing all of us. So I was saved. But anyhow, you get these really strange, and they're just trying to upset you, that's all. Trying to push your button. So you refuse to get upset. And just smile and laugh anyway. And if you do that, then you never get upset and angry what people say about you or do about you. You can be free. That's how to relax the mind. And you see that with your mindfulness when you're meditating. The problem isn't not what you have to deal with. It's not the sound of the person banging the door. It's not the sound of people talking, you know, when they're supposed to be keeping noble silence. It's not sort of the sight of seeing someone sneaking into the kitchen to eat something in the afternoon. That's not the problem. The problem is your reaction to it. That's the problem. Look, there was this one retreat, and there's this man who was making a very loud noise when he was meditating in the meditation hall. And after the first day in question time in the basket, "Can you please tell people to breathe quietly?" And the answer was, "That gentleman has got nasal cancer, terminal. His doctor hasn't given him long to live. There's nothing he can do. He's come here as the last throw of the dice, see if meditation can work, but he's dying." There was no more complaints when they realized that this was a person who was suffering with this big tumor blocking his nose. He couldn't breathe at all. And afterwards, what they thought made them angry before, they had this incredible compassion. "Breathe as loud as you like." And here is actually another success story. Because this is what happens when you meditate and the mind gets very peaceful and mindful and joyful. It's the very last day, just before we left, he came up to me. He just wanted a special interview. Because he said in the last meditation, the last of the whole retreat, he heard this pop sound. So that's what he heard, pop. And he could breathe through his nose. First time in weeks or months he could breathe through his nose. But it only lasted a minute, then it closed up again. But it was amazing. I mean, just for 1 minute, the tumour had actually, he could feel it just lessening enough to get some air through his nose. And the pop sound. But it closed up. And personally, I thought at the time it was too late. The guy had sort of started meditation far, far too late. It's just like, you know, that student who crams for the examinations the night before, never done anything all year. You can't do that. You've got to sort of do it a long time beforehand. But I left. I never saw him for a couple of years, or 3 years, and I saw him again. This guy came up to me in Sydney and said, "Do you remember me?" Please don't ask that question to people. It's really embarrassing. Because if I'm honest and say no, you think, he doesn't like me. After all this stuff which I've given to him, all these donations, all the time I've come to his retreats, and he still doesn't know my name. So don't do that to me. So many of you. And I'm over 60 now, I forget. What's your name again? Okay, Matthew. What's your name? He said, "Well, do you remember me?" And of course he said, I don't remember you at all. And he had a good reason to, because, you know, he looked totally different from this guy dying of cancer. He said, "I was that fella." I carried on, and the tumor completely went away. And he said he's spending all his life now teaching other people how to meditate. That's his gift to others in the world. It really works. We have to do it properly. Remember, if you're going to open up those arteries and open up those tumours and open up the mind, you have to do it with kindness, with gentleness, with softness. Because the cause of the problem was that tightness, that stress. that wanting, that desperate, I'm going to make it happen. I don't want this cancer. This is a demon in my palace. Get out. That's what causes it in the first place. And hopefully during this retreat, so far, it's been soft and gentle enough. Fun. There's nice funny stories, me acting the fool up here and playing around. Open the door to you when you should be opening the door to me. I'm supposed to be this high monk. But, you know, I love playing around like that. And the reason is because I make you happy, make you laugh, take away your tension, give you that sense of physical and mental freedom, create a lot of healing. Be mindful enough to notice it working in your body. Parts of you which were tense now open up. Tightnesses are released. Tensions are gone. Notice that in your body and notice that that's exactly how you meditate and how to free your mind. Don't have tension inside the mind. Every time you want to get to the next stage of meditation, you make your mind tense. Even if, you know, you've got some good intentions, you know, wanting to get nimittas or jhanas, or just want to have a little bit of peace, that wanting causes tightness and tension in your mind. And that's why you don't succeed in meditation. Go the other way. Relax. Just be peaceful. Have a bit of fun, a bit of joy. Do things differently. Look, because I play around, I can innovate. I heard this when I was a student, because I was studying physics, theoretical physics, and we were encouraged to play in the laboratory, to play on the blackboard with figures, with equations. Because I was told, and it's very true, when you play around, you actually go to places you've never been before, and you discover things which no one else has seen. Play is an important part of education when you're young. It's how kids learn, and it's also how adults learn, if we could only be that little bit more playful. Playful is joyful discovery, innovation, doing things in a different way just for the fun of it. And to give you an example, those of you who've been doing breath meditation, watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out. Breath go in, breath go out. Go in, go out. How long do I have to do this? Do you get bored with watching the breath? So, I decided to play around one day. Why do you always do it the same way? Why not do it a different way? So I invented. It's ever since the Lord Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree. No one has invented Ajahn Brahm's backwards breath meditation. I am the innovator of this. I have the patent. It's really amazing, isn't it, to be someone who actually invented something which hasn't been invented before. So this is backward breath meditation. If you haven't done this before, I'm now going to teach it to you. Now, not now, when I say go, I want you to close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times, and then open your eyes again. Are the instructions clear? When I say go, close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times. Okay? Go. At the end of the 3rd breath, open your eyes, but please keep breathing. Now, I guarantee 100%, unless you've heard me do this before, that you started with the in-breath. In, out, in, out, in, out. Now, when I say go, I want you to close your eyes, but this time breathe out first, then in, out, in, for 3 cycles. And after the 3rd in-breath, open your eyes. Okay, go. You'll find that's totally different. It shouldn't be. Whether you start the in-breath or the out-breath, it should be just the same, but it is not. So breathing out first, then in, is what's called backward breath meditation. So if you want to do something different when you're doing meditation, try backward breath meditation. Not in, out, or no, in, one, out, one. Out first and then in. And that's called backwards breath meditation. It makes it interesting. And if that doesn't work, I invented another type of breath meditation, which is 3 in-breaths to 1 out-breath. And it makes it fun, which means it's easy to do. And you can spend a lot of time having fun watching your breath. And all the time you're having fun watching the breath, you're finding all these other things which usually occupy the mind, all the thoughts and the worries and all this stuff which usually is called restlessness and sloth and torpor, but disappears. You're enjoying it. This is really interesting. This is really fun. So you can see how that is strengthening your mindfulness. And you enjoy meditation. It's fun. It's joyful. And no longer has it got this stigma of being boring, tough, just like a marine boot camp where you just have to endure and you wake up in the morning, oh God, another day of meditation. How many days did I get back to Singapore and to watch the TV, check my email and go and have something decent to eat and go to see a movie and oh jeez, what did I do this for? No, you just actually look forward to it. You know, it's fun. You get up in the morning, yeah, whoopee, sippity-doo-doo, another day, yes, meditate, backwards meditation, forwards meditation, ooh, yeah. You see you've got joy and fun, and when you have joy and fun doing something, you apply the mind, it engages, which means you're not restless. You don't have tiredness. You're not bored anymore. It becomes really interesting. Which means the meditation starts to bite. It becomes easy. You're sitting there and the mind is nice and interested. Interested in this simple thing, how to relax the body and relax the mind. You know when the body feels so relaxed, it feels so good. All the tightness disappears. Look, you know, I can sit up here for hours. And sometimes people say, Ajahn Brahm, you're getting old now. Don't you get achy knees or achy backs? Actually, I don't. The longer I sit, the better my body feels. It's counterintuitive, because you think if you sat for a long time, oh, you'd be really stiff. You know, you must really have so much endurance to sit there just for hour after hour without moving. Oh, that must be really painful. You must have such a strong mind to overcome that pain. You don't, there's no pain. You're just sitting there having a wonderful time. It's called Kaya Prasadi. The tranquility of the body. Everything is nice and relaxed and open, so there's no tightness, no tension. It feels relaxed, it feels free. Because I know how to relax my body. It's not that it's in one position all the time which is the problem, it's just what you do with those muscles. You can relax everything, and it feels so nice and easy. And after many hours of meditation, you get up and you feel like you can run a marathon. Your whole body is relaxed and free. And when your body is so relaxed, it's not causing you any problems, that's when you can totally attend to the mind. Because the body is finished with. You can let the body disappear. No aches, no pains to worry about. And just totally focus on this mind. And learn how to relax the mind. Some people know how to relax the body. A lot of people don't. Always tense in the body, even when you get to your house. You can't just sit back in the chair and relax. There's still tightness there. So it's mindfulness, learn how to relax the body. Let the shoulders droop, let the arms, let the robe fall off again. And just relaxing the body. Well, number one, it makes you look beautiful. It does, because people can see tension on people's faces and it makes them really ugly. Monsters have tight faces. So you ladies who are concerned about your appearance, still trying to attract a partner in life, or if you've got one, trying to keep them. Relax! And become more beautiful. But men, well, you like happy people. You like people who laugh, because they make you happy. It makes you very attractive. So this is not just Jhana Grove Meditation Retreat Center. This is Jhana Grove Beauty Salon. Spa and resort. Because it's true, because when you really relax, all the muscle, all the sort of the crow's feet, or the whatever it's called, the lines in your face disappear and all that sort of stuff, you know, you're doing well. You don't need Botox, you need meditation. To relax yourself. So you know how to relax the body. I hope by now, do exactly the same to your mind. Now, I've taught that to people who, they want to learn meditation quickly. They haven't done meditation before. Haven't done meditation before. And they say, how do I meditate? What are you supposed to do? And I've got fed up with teaching them to watch the breath, because that just makes them more tense, more of the same. So I tell them, just sit in a chair or sit with your back against the wall, put your feet out, relax. And you know, that at least they know how to relax their body. They think, and say, okay, relax it some more. If there's any tension or tightness anywhere, relax it. And you've, you know, heard me do that guided meditation. I'm sure Danny's got it on a CD somewhere, or it's on the internet, about going through your body from the toes to your feet, up your legs, and relaxing all parts of the body one by one. And you feel just so nice afterwards. You learn how to relax your body. Now, do the same with your mind. Just relax. Stop fighting things. If a thought comes, oh, you can come if you want. I'm just so relaxed, so chilled out. Past, oh, okay, you can come if you want, I'm not that interested. Oh, the future, yeah, it's alright, I don't care. You're just so relaxed and chilled out. Just like when you come for interviews, you tell me all these terrible things you've done. Ah, oh, very good. And you come and said, yeah, I just, you know, that neighbour banging the doors, I just killed them this morning. And I say, oh yeah, very good. No problems, I'm going to die anyway. It's a very fortunate place to die. So it's good karma for them. What's happening there? You see, all that tightness and fear is disappearing. You're relaxing the mind. And that's what meditation does. It makes you so peaceful. Until it gets to the point, there's nothing to do. You're totally free. There's a few times in my life, many times now, thank goodness, I look at myself, and I look at all the things which I'm supposed to be doing. I think, ah, no, not now. You know, I've got lots of things on my plate. Lots of places I'm supposed to go, lots of articles I'm supposed to write, lots of stuff which I'm supposed to arrange. Oh, there's a Katina ceremony coming up soon. Supposed to be arranging that. A couple of thousand people coming here. I'll just do it tomorrow. And there's moments, many moments in my life, and I try and make more of them every day, when I don't need anything, and I'm just happy to be here, just content, as if my in tray and out tray on my desk are totally empty. I look at them, it's nothing to do, nothing to write, nothing to change, nothing to build, nothing to sweep, nothing to develop. It's so beautiful. I can be at peace now. I can have these beautiful moments of contentment and freedom. I don't want anything in the world except to be right here talking with you. Isn't that wonderful? So that you can feel you don't want to be anywhere in the whole world except in this hall, listening to this silly monk say silly stories. Oh, isn't that wonderful? So you're so at peace. That's called contentment. Can you be mindful of what that contentment feels like? Just so happy to be here. You don't want anything else. You don't want to go anywhere. You just want to be here. Now that is what meditation feels like. Just wanting to be here. You don't need anything, no more money, no fixing up any problems. Everything is just so nice, just being here. Don't want to go anywhere. That's called freedom. It's called the freedom from desire. And stay there. It's called peace. You don't make peace. Making peace is just some fantasy in the future, like building a castle in the sky. Can't be done. You can't make peace. You can only be peace. Right now. You don't have to have it perfect. You just have to give up all of your wanting, all of your desires, and just be here. Totally content to be in this moment. Do you know what we mean? How it feels? Now, later on, when I leave here, later on today, see if you can sit here or in your room. Just wanting to be here. Isn't that beautiful? You don't need anything in the whole world. You're not looking for jhana. Some people, they come here and they said, right, this is it, I'm going to get jhana this retreat. I get everything I've got. I prepared myself before. If I can't get it here, in this jhana grove retreat center without jhana problem, I must be hopeless. Don't aim for anything. Just be. Stop all this sending your mind out into future things. Wanting this, wanting that. Just be who you are. You know that I give so many talks and I don't fake it. You know, people follow me around, they talk to me, and you know, this is who I am. You've seen me so many times. They're joking around, messing around, just scratching my nose. But I don't try. It's being filmed, it's on the internet. I better not scratch my nose. Oh my God. No, just scratch your nose. Really scratch it. I don't care, I'm just going to be who I am. If you don't like it, that's your defile, it's not mine. Bad reaction. So what you're really doing there is being at peace with yourself. And that's what meditation is there for. To at last, after all these years, just make peace with yourself. Don't make yourself perfect first. If you try and be perfect and someone who you're not, you never find any peace. So there's a time which comes, you look in the mirror and say, okay, I'm going to be at peace with myself now. I don't want to change myself one bit. With all my silliness and all my faults and all this and all that, which all the bad stuff I've done and all the silly stuff which I've done and all the times my robe falls off. Come on, fall off. I'm just going to be at peace with that. What you're doing there is being content, accepting, letting things be, and finding this beautiful peace and contentment. If you build up that peace and contentment, first of all, you're mindful enough to know what it is. The mindfulness is empowered by that peace and contentment, and it gets stronger and stronger. The nimittas, that's just contentment upon contentment upon contentment. Just like you put away $10 today, $20 tomorrow from your salary. And after a few years, you find you've got this big fortune in the bank. That's what happens with moments of contentment. The way the Buddha described it, he described a similar this huge water jar, like in the old days when there was not running water. You had to collect water in these huge jars. But it's bigger than your height, so you cannot look over the top to see how much water is inside. All you can do is put a little bit more water in, a little bit more contentment and peace. Another bit more contentment, more peace, more being at peace with yourself and at ease with the whole world. And soon, it's going to happen sooner or later, that water jar is going to go be full. And when it starts to overflow, that's the jhanas. You've had so much contentment, so much peace, so much not wanting, just being here, so much happiness, it builds and builds. You're so happy, so peaceful, so content. The contentment just grows and grows. That is the radiant mind, a mind which is radiant with contentment. Oh, it's just so at ease with itself and with the whole world. It gets so strong, it's just brilliant and blinding. It gets so strong, it takes you into the deep bliss states of jhanas. Contentment upon contentment upon contentment. Deeply happy. Well, you don't want anything. so much you don't want anything, you just can't move. All moving is because of discontent, wanting something, wanting to go somewhere. When you're just totally, deeply happy where you are, there's no reason to move. That's the bliss of contentment. That's what the jhanas are. That's the taste of enlightenment. The taste of freedom. Content. And the insight comes, I don't need anything to be that content. I don't need a perfect relationship. I don't need a healthy body. I don't need fame or to be respected by anybody. I don't need anything to be content. I can be content any place, any time, no matter what's happening. Ah, peace at last. So that's the talk this morning on contentment. I hope you enjoyed it. Are you content with it?
Yes.
Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Now, this afternoon, I have to be over at Bodhidharma Monastery from 4 to 6 because it's Purana Day, the full moon day. So there will be interviews this morning, up to just before 10 o'clock, and also this afternoon. But I have to have the last interview to finish at 9:50. So finish at 15:50. So it's 3 p.m., 3:10, 3:20, 3:30, 3:40, 3:50. No, 3:40 is the last one. That's why I crossed out the bottom two lines. But there is spaces this morning. I noticed when I came in here, there's about still two or three places for this morning's interview. So if you really want an interview, you better be quick. On your marks. Get set.